Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show.
Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Tom Evans. Tom is an author, book writer and poet who mentors writers on how to unleash the book inside themselves. He specialises in removing writer's block, and we've actually done a podcast on that last year, which I'll link to in the show notes. Now, why Tom's here today is he's just recently released a number of iPhone apps, which is what we're going to be talking about. So welcome, Tom.
Hi there, John. Is it morning or evening?
Ah, it's evening. Evening, your morning. So, yes, it's a big cross-continent discussion today. So maybe you could start, for those people who didn't listen to our other podcast, maybe you can tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about your books.
Sure, thank you for that. Yeah, my main aim is to help people that want to publish, to get published. And so I do work on the psychological blocks that get in people's way. Once we blast through those blocks, I get involved with the physical blocks and the practical blocks that stop people getting published. So whether that's to self-publish in print or to e-publish or to publish via a blog or whatever, then as an ex-techie, I help people out go over those hurdles as well. So they're all blocks of one form or other.
And you've written fiction, non-fiction, poetry, all kinds of things, haven't you?
Yeah, because apart from the fact I just love writing, is that I don't believe it's congruent to really help people out in this area unless you're actually doing it yourself, you know? So I always like to be pushing the envelope, pushing the curve of what's possible, and experimenting. And then as soon as I find something that works, I like sharing that with my clients and the people that follow my blog.
Yes, absolutely, and we're like-minded like that, and I know you're here today to share with us some more. So so what iPhone apps do you currently have available?
Well, what I did, I wrote this book called 100 Years of Ermyntrude about 3 years ago, and it came out as a PDF initially, an e-book, and then it came out as an MP3 audio book, then it came out as an MP4 video book, like there's a program in the UK called Jack and Ori where people used to actors and actresses used to read stories to kids just before tea time. And then I wrote two sequels and I put it out in print. Last year I Twittered it because I found each stanza in the book was less than 140 characters. And then when I spotted the iPhone, I thought, hang on, this is just perfect for the iPhone. So what it is a short story. You can read it or listen to it in 20 minutes. So you either lie back and just listen to the audio narration, or you can read it, and it can pause any time. So if your phone goes, then it pauses, and then you jump straight back to the point you were at. And so I put that out in January. People started to like it. One of the first reviews I got was, what a great book to commute to. And so I thought, well, that's a wonderful idea, isn't it? And so I put this, I registered the URL commuterbooks.com. Then lo and behold, a load of people got hold of me saying, can I have one too? And I'm on my sixth app now, would you believe?
And wow.
We're in March.
I think that's brilliant because it is definitely one of those things that's very now, you know. I mean, everyone loves Apple, and I have an iPhone, and you do, don't you?
I do. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
About to get an iPad too, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We're waiting for that to ship. And it's kind of, you know, it's brilliant to hear that you've done the book in lots of other ways too. It's not that you've come up with an app out of nowhere, like a game app or whatever. You actually have a book mm-hmm. that you've put into all these different formats. So I just wanted to point that out to people listening that you had that book already, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. But basically what you're doing is repurposing existing material for a new audience in a new format. So it's not about a technology play, it's about a marketing play, getting in front of, you know, what's over 10 million iPhone users right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to point out there as well that having a book in multiple formats means you can reach more people, like you said. And also, the same person will buy it in multiple formats, won't they? Have you found that with your books?
Yeah, well, remember in the old days, if you're old enough to remember LPs, and I bet when CDs came out, you rebought that same LP as a CD, and you've probably downloaded that now as an MP3 to your iPod. You know, so that's that band in the 60s and 70s has probably had three lots of your money, and the same is true for authors nowadays. And of course, what you can do, though, of course, is add value each time. You can actually make it more relevant to the format. So, for example, me by adding audio to it and musical accompaniment sort of gives it a real different resonance, you know. And that's professionally recorded audio with an actress, so it sort of gives it sort of great depth to it, yeah. But you're not.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, I was going to say it's a brilliant idea with the commuting as well, because, you know, so often people have their phone. Well, people always have their phones while they're commuting, and it, you know, just stopping for a moment to relax and listen to an audio if they don't want to look at the screen is brilliant.
Yeah, especially when the point of the book is to get people to stop commuting completely and go and live their lives to the full.
Exactly, and just another example of something I've bought in multiple formats, the Gary Vaynerchuk book Crush It. I've got in print and ebook and the book and the audio edition, because they all offer something a bit different. And I've got your Ermintrude in print and on the iPhone as well, so I think it's a brilliant idea. Okay, so let's move on. So I'm also, you know, wanted to ask you about why you personally decided to, well, you, I guess you've explained a little bit, but your brand as the book writer is, you know, kind of a spiritual guy concerned with the muse and creativity. And how do you blend that with technology, and how do you introduce authors who might be a bit scared of the tech side? And I guess, why should people consider an iPhone app? Lots of questions.
Oh, that's how many, where should we start? Well, basically, I don't equate things like spirituality and religion, for example. To me, spirituality is more akin to science than anything else. And if you go back through the ages, the alchemists have always been very spiritual people. Newton was very spiritual. And to me, it's all about finding out. It's a great discovery about, you know, how we work, why we're here. It's what I write about. And by exploring that, then, you know, you can't explore that without being scientific and technical, and without looking back at mysticism throughout the ages. So I think they blend together quite well, personally. And apart from anything else, it's great fun. But I'm not into the sort of woo-woo-la-la side of spirituality, but more the sort of grounded, practical side. And if I find something that comes maybe from a spiritual tradition that works really well, and I give you a great one for authors, and it's breathing. You know, if you just breathe differently, your inspiration changes completely. Now, that's the sort of technique you never find any book on writing getting published, is it?
Absolutely.
It comes straight from the breathing technique I teach, comes straight from the Taoist tradition. And so that's that side of things. So, and then how do you sort of equate that with the technical side? Well, to me, then, you know, things have got to be working, they've got to be grounded to have any validity, really. So, you know, I'd sort of make things happen and happen in physical reality.
Sure, that's
the questions there.
No, it does. It's interesting to me. And, you know, I said I want to create an iPhone app this year, but it's kind of like, well, you know, thinking about when to do it and how to do it, hence why you're on the show. But so let's get into the practicalities then. So how did you actually go from having your book to having it actually on for sale on the iTunes store?
Okay, well, there's a few hoops to jump through. The first is you've got to find yourself an object-oriented programmer, someone that works with Apple code, which I did. And I did that through a single tweet, would you believe? I put a tweet out in October saying programmer wanted, and someone popped their head up, and I've been working with this guy ever since, which has been fantastic. And you've got to know a bit of you've got to sign up as an Apple developer, which I've done. I've gone and studied what's involved in putting an app together, so I can specify exactly what's needed. So when the code arrives, there's no surprises. And then what you've got to do is something. You've got to put it into the Apple approval process, which is this sort of nebulous, strange process that's supposed to take 2 or 3 weeks, and you get rejected for all sorts of strange reasons. But my first app went in on the 5th of January, and I got it approved in less than a day. Can you believe?
Wow!
And we can't believe why this has happened. I put another app in this Monday, and it's just been approved today. It'll be available by the end of today. So I think Apple have really got their act together. And you've got to make sure, planning and making sure you've ticked all the technical boxes and knowing why they reject apps. And there's a number of reasons why you might get an app rejected. Content-wise is one, and the other might be just the program doing something naughty to the iPhone that's would cause it to crash or something like that. And just being good about and observant about those sort of things pays great dividends, of course. And when it's out there, it's all about promoting it. And, you know, we can't do any better than using Twitter and social networks and what have you.
Yeah. So you mentioned there a couple of things. Firstly, you had to find a developer. And I guess, you know, for people out there, they can look on Twitter. You can, presumably you can look on sites like Elance or Odesk. Did you try any of those?
No, I put less than 140 characters out and the right person just arrived.
That's wonderful.
Exactly.
I would also encourage, you know, anybody listening, you can try those sites or guru.com, are places where you can find Apple developers as well.
Absolutely, they're really good sites. Yeah,
and you also said you studied how to put an app together. What resources did you use for that study?
Well, the Apple Development Center itself has got a huge library of stuff online. I just bought a few books on how to do it as well, just from Amazon. The classic one, how to write an app in 24 hours, and that's what made me realise that I could do it because I'm an ex-techie. But my time's better spent on the specification of the applications and also writing my own work. So that's why I subcontract that out. And also I've got a fantastic graphic designer as well who I sub the app design and the user interface design to. So you need those resources. So you need someone who can design it, someone who can produce the assets, whether that's text, video, audio, or whatever. My role really is to brainstorm what the app's all about, because it's not just about read-only or listen-only apps. So, for example, I've done three apps now where they're cards, and you shake the iPhone and you get a different card, different inspiration each day. If you like that inspiration, you can then email it to a friend, or you can tweet it out to the world. And I'm just about to work on an app for a social network site where we're going to take the whole site, and which is a pretty huge monolithic structure, which is very hard to read in a browser, and parse it using RSS, really simple syndication, so it works really well on the iPhone. So there's a bunch of stuff you can do to innovate around what the iPhone as a platform can do, apart from just being a display device.
And I guess you obviously have a technical background, but for people who, you know, don't, I would still recommend that they have a look at the Apple Developer Center and, you know, to get an idea, because otherwise you could potentially get quite ripped off, I imagine, by things that, like you said, you just bought a book on Amazon for, you know, $20 or something. So it's worth spending a bit of time deciding what you want before you talk to a actual developer.
Yeah, and I did actually, even though I found my developer pretty much straight off, I did actually go and find two other developers as well, just to make sure that this chap was good. And I found out that you literally get what you pay for, and there are a few, like in any business, there are a few charlatans out there, and there's some very expensive app developers as well. So, for example, to get that work done in the UK would probably cost me about four or five times more than what I pay for at the moment, which makes it non-cost effective for authors.
Absolutely. So how much, I mean, if you don't mind, you know, how much did it cost you, and was it worth it, or I guess, was it worth it? Would that be the right question?
Yeah, well, you know, if you self-publish a book and you use, I don't know, a Lulu or a Lightning Source or someone like that to get your book done, then by the time you add up all the bills, like the cover design, the layout, the typography and what have you, you're probably looking in the region, in UK pounds, between about £500 and £1,500 to get a high-quality book done. And in that same sort of area for one of the commuter books, you can get a pretty good product. And if you think about, a magazine where you might take an ad out, and a colour ad in a magazine, you might spend the same amount of money, and that's gone. Whereas if you do an app, then one, the app stays there for a long time, and two, you can recoup your revenue and your investment back, and then start to make real revenue on top of it. So it's a pretty good investment if you see it as a way of marketing, promoting your business as well, and promoting your other books. Because, of course, at the back of the apps, there's an upsell to the conventional printed products as well.
And that's a really good point. I guess the other question is, you know, was it worth it? So you say you talk about getting your investment back again. Some people, obviously the most popular apps are free. but for the, you know, do people buy these book apps? Is there a market in book apps?
Yeah, there seems to be. I've just got the first stats through, and I have to say it's been rather pleasing. I'm not retiring just yet, but. I think I've sold more apps in a couple of months than I sold books in about two quarters last year. Kind of, maybe because it's interesting, it's fresh, and it's new. But you know, it's a great start, really, from a standing start.
And how much is Ermintrude as an app?
Well, Ermintrude's $1.99. And today I'm just publishing another short story, which I'm actually going to make completely free, which is a 7,000-word short story you can read in... in two train journeys, one up to London, one back down again, or something like that. So I've got other apps at 99 cents, and another book that's $7.99. So you can vary the price on a day to day basis. So you can test the market out to see what the sweet spot is for the market. Yeah, which is fantastic.
Mm. That is good, actually. And can you use tags or, you know, ways that people can find it? How do you specify that type of thing?
Yeah, the iTunes store supports tags. You've got 100 characters to play with. So you might use the tag ebook, for example, but you'd also use the topical tag around the content of your book. Let's say it's a non-fiction book, I don't know, about some healing or therapy or business or something like that, and you use those tags. And then when people search in the app store, then relevant app will come up. It's not, I have to say, the app store's not brilliant. They could really improve it, which I believe they're going to when the iPad comes out, because they're going to have an iBook section, which will probably have a better level of metadata, I would hope.
Now, there's a good point. I thought the apps would stay as apps and the iBooks will be within the iBook app.
Yes and no. Yes, you'll be able to run any iPhone app on an iPad. But one of the things this is a bit of a techie point. One of the things that you can't do on an iPhone is run more than one program at the same time. And that's to stop things like viruses getting in. So a virus could come in through an app and then run another app and cause it to crash or whatever. So they lock the operating system down fairly tightly. Whereas with the iPad, what you'll be able to do is launch other programs from a program. Now, this might sound a bit of a technical point, but I'll explain how it works in the context of a book. So take my book, Blocks, which is quite a small book. It's designed to be small so people who've got writer's block can read it and won't get bogged down in a huge book. But it comes with 6 audio tracks to help you get into altered states of consciousness. And each chapter comes with an exercise at the end of the chapter. So what you do in an iPad is, once you get to the point where it says, now listen to the audio, you'd get the audio to play from within the book. And when it says, do this exercise, then it will launch either the word processor so you can do the exercise directly from the book, or it will launch a mind mapping application so you can do the mind mapping exercise. And that's something you can't do on the iPhone, but you will be able to do on the iPad, and that's to create really interactive textbooks.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is. We are so, you know, it's, but this time next year, things are just going to be amazing. You know, it's really very exciting, I think, where we are at the moment in the market as people realise more and more what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. That sounds very cool, what you're saying. So basically the apps are future proof because they can go on any Apple mobile device, I guess, including the iPad and the iTouch, which is the non-phone option. Sure. But yeah, also, you know, lots of other possibilities as well, which we'll probably have to interview in another 6 months' time when the iPad's available.
Yeah, and don't forget that the Google and other players are coming out with smartphones as well. So you know, that once you get your materials into these forms, it's fairly easy to migrate it onto other platforms.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And we're going to see a pretty sophisticated successor to Kindle coming out from Apple, Amazon in a year's time as well.
Yes, they've opened it up to developers, haven't they, as they well?
Yeah, there's a new SDK, software development kit coming out soon.
Yeah, well, you know, really exciting times. And just a plug for your Blocks book as well. I used it last year before NaNoWriMo and got the idea for my novel. Wow. So, yeah, I'll just plug that as well. So,
thank you.
And that's on your website at thebookwrite.com.
And available for the Kindle now.
And available for the Kindle, which is also on the iPhone. It's just a connected world. Okay, a couple more questions. So, you know, basically what benefit, you know, would an author get from having an iPhone app, assuming that they're not going to become a millionaire?
Okay, so the first is, and we've been talking a lot about books on the iPhone, and that really works for, I would say, short stories, because you don't want to be reading a sort of 100,000 word book or novel on the iPhone. The screen is just not big enough for it. So you, aside from just publishing a book hook, you can also publish an app that complements your existing book, so that uses the full capability of the phone. So let's say you had a book which asked the client to do certain tasking, and so on a certain date you recommend you do one thing or another thing, and then you complete this. And then what you could do is you could write an app that would actually complement your book and augment your book to give the client the ability to add tasks to their calendar and then to be reminded to do said tasks along the recommendations in your book, let's say. Does that give you a good example?
Yeah, that is a good one. Actually, I was going to ask you about the audio. Could I put this podcast into an app?
Yeah, you could. I'll give you an example. I'm working on an app for a hypnotherapist at the moment, and what we've done is taken her book, which is about 40,000 words, and I'm editing it down to about 10,000 words, so just the essence of the book is in there. And her book comes with four visualizations that are on a CD, and what we're doing is embedding those in the app at the relevant time. So we could do an app, let's say, which is how to build an app, and one of the components of that app is this interview. That makes sense. So we do an app which is how to build an app for authors. And then we embed that in, and perhaps a video and a couple of samples of the books as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's actually more like, I mean, I think, you know, for people just thinking about putting their book in an app, that's quite basic. And what you're saying is think more like a interactive experience.
Exactly, yeah. And we haven't even spoken about things like geocoding, you know. So let's say you wrote a travel book or travel app, then the content can be completely focused or polarized on where the location of the person. So if you're talking about reviews of restaurants or hotels and that sort of stuff, then you can present the person with the content that's relevant to their location, and also interact with the internet as well. So you can have components that aren't embedded in the app but are linked to the internet.
It becomes fully dynamic. That's very cool.
Exactly.
That's very cool.
And let's say for children's books, you can integrate a game element as well, or a testing element, or an educational element. Yeah. So the main thing that you require to do an app is actually a fantastic, slight knowledge of the platform, but also an imagination.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Because, you know, let's face it, there's a stack of programmers out there who can do whatever you ask, but if you don't ask the right thing, you know, you're not going to get a good result.
And you're going to be disappointed and end up with a very huge bill that you're embarrassed about.
okay, so just on that commuter books, people can actually contact you about that, can't they?
Yeah, you can actually use www.commuterbooks.com. That's commuter with an A in the middle. Or go to my BookWrite blog, and it's on there. As I said, there will be... there's going to be two free apps by the time this podcast comes out available, so you can actually sample different kinds of apps for free. And one recommendation I have for any author that's even thinking about going down this road is to buy a device or play with a device first, so you're familiar with the environment. I don't want to get involved with somebody that's not played with it, because it makes it very difficult to have a meaningful conversation about what can be done unless you actually experience the environment.
And I think if you don't have a device, you probably don't understand how it would work anyway. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I want an iPhone app because I've got an iPhone and I buy apps.
Exactly.
Yeah. you know, that's why I wanted to do one. But brilliant. Okay, one last question. So once you have an iPhone app, there's obviously however many millions of other apps. So how do you differentiate yourself, and how do you actually sell some?
Well, that's a good question, and that's really my next task, actually, to say, okay, how do we ramp this up? Well, there's loads of app review sites out there. So Apple lets you download some promo codes for free, so you can give these promo codes to app reviewers. And I've got a list of those that I submit all the apps to. There's the social networks, of course, which are fantastic for that, and I'm going to be using Twitter for my new app today to spread the word about that. It's actually World Book Day today, believe it or not, but I think it's World Book Day in the UK and Ireland, which is a bit strange. So so I'm going to use World Book Day as a launch pad to kick this one off today and get that fluttering around. But it tends to be a very viral community. So, you know, once you get and you have to get over a tipping point. So you get enough people doing it, you rise up through the ranks on the App Store. And the real sweet spot is to get in the sort of top 25 of apps for the recommended by Apple. And you just do that by getting loads of reviews, getting loads of people to rate it, and loads of people talking about it.
Mm. So pretty similar to book marketing then?
It's identical, but you know, and you can actually use the phone itself. So for example, the app, so two of the apps that we've built, you can tweet a sample of the app from within the app itself to give, so they've got viral components built into the apps.
Mm, that's an excellent idea. And then do you have to look at upgrading them over time?
That's a good question, actually. The upgrade facility is one of the best things on the App Store, because one of the things they do, let's say you've got, I don't know, 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 or a million apps out there. Let's say you find a programming error, or in a book you find a spelling mistake. What you do is when you update the app, which is sort of free to do on the Apple Store, everybody that's downloaded the app gets a notification that there's a new app out there, which of course gives you the opportunity as the author to tell the app owner something new. So take Ermintrude, for example. I'm going to do the Tristan and the Lucy sequels. So I'm doing Tristan in March and Lucy in April. And when I publish Tristan, I will update Ermintrude to tell all the people that have got Ermintrude that Tristan's now available.
Mm.
And when I publish the Lucy story, I'll update Tristan's story and Ermintrude's story to tell all the people that have got those two apps that the new app's available. So you've got this fantastic upsell mechanism built into the way that Apple manage the digital rights management, which is, you know, the ownership. On that note, by the way, that you know, whatever you put out there is very safe and uncopyable, which is fantastic.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it sounds like the only potential downside for people right off the bat is the money that they potentially have to put up front for this. Would that be true?
It would be true, but having said that, I'd see it as an investment, not a cost.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly at the moment, there's great marketing, there's great PR possibilities by putting apps out there. So, you know, I've got a number of journalists very interested in the work that both me and the authors I'm working with have been doing, because they're doing apps and it's fairly, very current. How long that will go on for, you know, I can't say, but then we got the iPad coming out, we've got the Kindle 3 or 4 coming out, so you'll always have these opportunities if you're sort of keeping ahead of the curve.
No, you're exactly right, and I think it will continue at least probably, I guess, a year, while ebooks and apps and things are still relatively new in the book area anyway.
Indeed, yeah.
You know, because writing and books and publishers are a bit slow on the uptake.
Exactly, yeah. There's at least a year to an 18-month time constant if you work with a mainstream publisher. So there's a great opportunity to get out there and do things in the meantime on your own.
Mm.
Which, of course, is what publishers want to see. They want to see that you've got a bit of get up and go. And you're actually testing your market, testing your books and what have you.
It would count as digital rights, wouldn't it? So if people were actually under contract, they would have to own the digital rights to actually do
one. If you wanted to repurpose existing content, yeah, that would be a point. You need to make sure that that your publisher allows that to be done. Well, having said that, I'm working with a publisher at the moment, so, you know, if your contract doesn't allow that, then I'll just have a conversation directly with the publisher and work with them.
Mm. Well, some brilliant ideas there, and I'm going to go away and do some more research on this myself. So where can people find you and about your books as well as your apps?
Well, if you just go to thebookwrite.com, which is like playwright book with a book in the middle, then you'll find the work that I do on the unblocking side, and you'll find the work that I do on the app side, all from the homepage, and that marvellous tag cloud that you saw this morning.
Yes, it looks fantastic. Actually, it's another thing we were talking about beforehand. And also, I will put a link to our other podcast, which was all about removing writer's block, which we did last year. So if people are interested in that, that is also available. So thanks ever so much for your time, Tom. That was really good.
Oh, it's always good to talk to you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.